Welcome to the debate. Usually when we talk about a medical intervention, there's this expectation of absolute precision.
Right, a very clean outcome.
Yeah, it's a lot like structural engineering, I think. You have a patient with a blocked artery, the angiogram shows the exact location of the plaque, and the doctor just points to the monitor and says, you know, there it is.
Exactly. It's binary, it's highly targeted, blocked or not blocked. It's a clean mechanical fix.
Right. And I mean, it is deeply comforting. We naturally gravitate toward problems that have defined locable boundaries and immediate measurable solutions. You go in, you place the stent, the blood flows again.
Sure.
But then you step into the modern landscape of chronic disease, metabolic dysfunction, and ecological degradation, and suddenly that precision engineering model just hits a massive wall.
Well, it hits a wall because we are no longer looking at an isolated plumbing problem. We are looking at, honestly, the absolute definition of systemic complexity.
Exactly.
This is a diagnostic landscape that is inextricably intertwined with how our entire civilization lives, works, eats, and sleeps. And in that environment, that sharp, localized X-ray vision starts to blur significantly.
Which brings us to the core of what we're unpacking today. We are exploring the future paradigm of medicine in the face of these, frankly, highly complex modern crises.
Right.
We're asking a central question here. Should medicine maintain its historically successful disease-centered, adaptationist biomedical model, or must it undergo a fundamental paradigm shift toward a natural drift framework?
Meaning a framework that treats the individual organism and its lived environment as a single, inseparable unity.
Exactly. And this discourse emerges directly from a fascinating academic white paper titled Natural Drift and the Future of Medicine, by Dr. Bechara Saheli.
Yeah.
I look at this paper and I see a necessary, urgent revolution. To me, it makes a really compelling case that medicine has to stop merely treating downstream injuries. I represent the position that we have to fundamentally adopt this natural drift framework to actively address the organism niche unities that are producing these diseases in the first place.
And while I read the exact same paper and, you know, I acknowledge that systemic factors undeniably matter, I see a massive danger in that revolution.
Danger in what sense?
Well, my position is that replacing the rigorous, localized focus of traditional biomedicine with a broad, philosophical, civilizational drift paradigm invites extreme scope creep. If we aren't careful, we risk completely diluting the clinical efficacy that actually saves lives on the emergency room table.
Okay, well, I think the best place to start is with the fundamental biology of causation, because the traditional evolutionary story, the one underpinning modern biomedicine, tells us that organisms adapt to a pre-given external environment.
Right, standard Darwinian adaptation.
Yeah, it frames the environment as an instructor. The environment presents a problem, say, a cold climate, and the organism adapts by growing thicker fur to solve it. But Humberto Maturana's concept of natural drift, which this paper builds on, shows us something much more profound. It argues for organism niche co-arising.
Wait, before we dive too deep into the terminology, let's just unpack that. When you say organism niche co-arising, what does that actually mean mechanically?
Good question.
Because, you know, standard adaptation is pretty easy to grasp. Environment changes, organism adapts or dies. What is co-arising changing about that equation?
It changes the idea of who is in charge, basically. A living system doesn't just passively respond to a static world. The organism and its niche change together in a constant process of co-drift. They are permanently coupled.
Okay.
So what is conserved across generations isn't just a genetic trait, it is an entire way of living. Think about our current health crises. The explosive rise in metabolic dysfunction, zoonotic spillovers, severe mental distress. In the standard biomedical model, we view these as a series of isolated biological malfunctions.
Right. A broken pancreas, an invasive pathogen, a chemical imbalance.
Exactly. But through the lens of natural drift, these aren't isolated malfunctions at all. They are the direct, coherent result of a civilizational drift.
I see.
We have built specific niches, Our ultra-processed food systems, our sedentary labor structures, our constantly connected digital environments. These systems are currently conserving life, disabling ways of living.
So the medicine?
Medicine can't just be the rescue team waiting at the bottom of the waterfall to pull out the drowning bodies. It has to diagnose the upstream organism-niche relations that actually produce the trajectory of disease.
I mean, I understand the philosophical elegance of the natural drift concept. It really provides a beautiful, sweeping narrative of human history. But we have to defend the traditional biomedical model's unmatched power, specifically in rescue medicine, anatomy, microbiology, and pharmacology.
Unmatched power in acute settings, sure.
Yes, but the biomedical gaze, the ability to isolate a lesion, sequence a pathogen, target a specific receptor, that has saved millions of lives precisely because it isolates the biological variable from the noise of the universe.
But isn't that isolation exactly what's blinding us to chronic disease?
Isolation is a tool, and a highly effective one. While biosphere-anthroposphere unity is a deeply relevant ecological truth, treating it as a literal operational medical framework runs a huge risk. Dr. Salleh's text actually warns against this. He calls it autopoietic inflation.
Meaning we apply biological concepts to things that aren't actually alive.
Exactly. It is the dangerous mistake of treating non-living systems like a hospital network, a national economy, or an agricultural supply chain as if they operate identically to biological living organisms. Medicine's primary foundational duty is physiological stabilization.
Right, but
we utilize specific, measurable determinants. If we ask medicine to diagnose and cure abstract civilizational drifts, we lose the plot entirely.
That's a fair warning about autopoietic inflation, I'll give you that. But I completely disagree that diagnosing a drift is abstract. Let's look at how the biology of causation works in practice.
Okay.
The traditional adaptationist model treats the environment as an external instructor, like we said. But the text introduces a vital concept to replace it: structural determinism.
Let me stop you there. If I'm a physician listening to this right now, structural determinism sounds like something from a sociology lecture.
It really isn't, though.
Ground that for us. What is the actual mechanism?
Okay, let's use a very physical analogy. Imagine I have a stick, and I violently poke a glass window, and then I use the exact same stick with the exact same force to poke a feather pillow.
The glass shatters, the pillow just dents.
Precisely. The environment, the stick, the force, the angle was identical in both scenarios. The environment triggered the event, but the environment didn't dictate the outcome.
Ah.
The unique internal structure of the glass determined that it would shatter. The structure of the pillow determined it would dent. The medium triggers, but the organism specifies its own changes based on its unique structure and history. That is structural determinism.
Okay. I follow the physics of the analogy. How does that change the practice of medicine, though?
Let's apply it to antimicrobial resistance, or AMR. In the adaptationist biomedical model, AMR is framed simply as microbial evolution under drug pressure. The antibiotic is the stick, the bacteria adapt to survive it.
Right.
But through the lens of natural drift and structural determinism, AMR is a conserved anthroposophic pattern. It is the result of our entire coupled history, our prescribing habits, the massive agricultural use of antibiotics in livestock to speed up growth.
The industrial food supply. Yeah.
Exactly. Pharmaceutical market incentives that discourage new antibiotic research. Global sanitation conditions, the bacteria are co-drifting within a human-altered niche. If we treat AMR merely as a biological threat requiring a new drug, we completely ignore the structure that generated the resistance in the first place.
I have to push back hard here, because we have to ask a crucial question. Does redefining adaptation as structural drift actually change the clinical response at the bedside? Or does it just swap highly useful, targeted scientific vocabulary for philosophical jargon?
Oh, it absolutely changes the response.
I don't see how. Let's stay with AMR, or, you know, consider cancer clonal evolution or vaccine escape. The adaptationist model, the idea of selective pressure acting on random mutation, is incredibly practical.
In a lab, maybe?
In the clinic. It allows us to track genomic variants. It allows us to anticipate immune escape and design next-generation therapeutics. When a patient is crashing in the ICU from a multidrug-resistant sepsis infection, understanding the conserved anthropospheric pattern of agricultural livestock intensification does not help the intensivist keep that patient's blood pressure up.
Well, obviously not in the ICU, but...
Focusing heavily on the coupled history and organism niche unity distracts from the immediate biological threat that needs neutralizing right now.
But you are assuming the clinical response is only what happens in the ICU during an acute crash. That is a massive blind spot. The vocabulary absolutely changes the clinical response because it expands what we consider to be a practical diagnosis before the crash ever happens.
Expand on that. How does vocabulary change the physical exam?
By changing the diagnostic grammar, the source material introduces a framework called the field of viability. Standard medicine uses things like the social determinants of health, saying a patient has food insecurity, for example.
Which is standard practice.
But those are treated as static, external labels. They just sit on the chart. The field of viability uses 7 active, interacting primitives to understand the patient's structure. Those primitives are constraints, margins, state, disturbance, perception, regulation, and options.
Wow. That sounds like an exhaustive checklist for a 15-minute consult. Let's walk through the causality of it, because it maps the actual mechanisms of chronic disease perfectly.
Take a patient presenting with poorly controlled type 2 diabetes and hypertension. In your traditional model, that's a failing body requiring physiological stabilization.
Right. We need to up their insulin. We need to add another antihypertensive drug.
Right.
Because their blood sugar and blood pressure are objectively too high and will damage their vessels. Yes.
Right. But why are they high? In the natural drift framework, we don't just see a failing pancreas. We map the primitives. We see a person operating under severe constraints. Maybe they live in a built environment lacking any affordable fresh food.
Okay.
Because of that, their disturbance level is high. They are eating an ultra-processed food system that continually perturbs their metabolic state with severe glucose spikes.
Well, we know processed food is bad. We counsel them on diet.
But look at their margins. Maybe they work night shifts. Their sleep architecture is destroyed, meaning their autonomic nervous system has zero time to recover. Their margins are totally depleted.
I see where you're going.
Because of this structural setup, the body's perception of its environment is one of constant threat. So how does it respond? Through regulation. It downregulates insulin sensitivity as a protective mechanism. It holds on to fat. When we map these primitives, we realize the disease isn't an internal failure at all. It is a perfectly coherent, logical, biological response to a pathological niche.
I see the causality you're laying out. I really do. But let's bring this back to the reality of clinical practice. Expecting a clinician to diagnose the global food system and labor practices while treating hyperglycemia is like asking a firefighter to redesign the city's zoning laws while putting out a burning building.
That implies the doctor has to fix the food system themselves.
But even just mapping it, you are asking the person with the fire hose to put down the hose and investigate the historical lobbying efforts of the synthetic materials industry that made the house flammable. It is entirely beyond their scope.
I don't think it's beyond their scope to ask about sleep and food.
The text itself warns about scope discipline. If the minimal clinical version of this field of viability grammar asks clinicians to identify everything from normalized ecological disturbances to captured institutional regulations in a standard consult, doesn't it invite massive clinical paralysis?
Not necessarily.
We cannot ask doctors to become sociologists, economists, and urban planners simultaneously. It distracts them from the immediate life-saving biomedical rescue they are uniquely trained to perform.
I completely understand the fear of clinical paralysis, but let me give you a different perspective on what the clinician is actually doing here. The point is not for the physician to personally rewrite zoning laws. The point is to stop misdiagnosing field-constrained behavior as isolated personal failure or pure biological malfunction.
Meaning, stop blaming the patient for non-compliance.
Exactly. When the clinician uses these 7 primitives, even in a minimal conversational way, they shift from asking, why is this patient failing to lower their blood sugar, to what limits are being conserved in this person's life field? And that connects this diagnostic grammar directly to how we treat them physiologically.
Right.
The text introduces two brilliant concepts here, coherence physiology and salugenesis.
Salugenesis being the origins of health as opposed to pathogenesis, the origins of disease.
Yes. And coherence physiology recognizes that chronic illness is very often a state of defensive lock-in. Let's look at the mechanism. Think of a persistent inflammatory tone or metabolic defense like insulin resistance.
Okay.
The body is literally conserving a defensive posture because the field continues to signal threat or disturbance, like the lack of sleep and processed food we talked about. Standard medicine uses pharmacology to forcefully suppress these symptoms.
Like using a statin or an immunosuppressant or a beta blocker.
Right. But suppressing the symptom may actually prevent the organism from exiting the defensive state. Think of it like a car's check engine light. Suppressing the symptom with pharmacology is like putting black tape over the flashing check engine light.
Okay.
Yes, the annoying flashing stops, the symptom is suppressed, but the engine is still actively tearing itself apart because you haven't actually changed the oil or fixed the timing belt. True healing, salugenesis, requires restoring the conditions for the organism to recover its viable coherence. You cannot just block a receptor with a chemical and expect the body to heal if the niche is still actively injuring it.
That is a highly compelling analogy. But have you considered that putting tape over the check engine light, symptom suppression, is often the absolutely necessary margin-protecting tool that keeps the car on the road at all?
But it's a temporary fix masquerading as a cure.
Sometimes a temporary fix is all we have. You speak of defensive lock-in and restoring conditions for salugenesis, but for a patient whose civilizational field cannot be immediately altered, a patient who still has to go back to that shift work tonight, who still lives in that food desert tomorrow morning, symptom suppression is the only thing keeping them alive.
Well,
let's talk about the concept of clinical Wu Wei mentioned in the text.
Right, the Taoist concept of non-forcing transformation, creating conditions where the body naturally returns to health without violent intervention.
Exactly. It is a beautiful concept. But clinical Wu Wei is a luxury that acute care simply cannot afford. When a patient is facing severe metabolic dysregulation or a cytokine storm or autoimmune destruction of their joints, forced intervention is precisely what is required.
I'm not saying we abandon interventions.
Suppressing, replacing, blocking, these are the absolute triumphs of modern biomedicine. Waiting for the macro conditions of salugenesis to align while a patient's kidneys are actively failing is a dereliction of clinical duty. If the foundation of the house is sinking, yes, we need to fix the soil eventually. But if a pipe bursts right now, you want a plumber with a wrench, not an architect to muse about the foundation.
I'm not convinced by that line of reasoning because it creates a false dichotomy between acute rescue and systemic coherence. The white paper is very careful here. It explicitly states that a mature medicine must integrate three layers: rescue medicine, coherence medicine, and life field medicine. Nobody, not Dr. Salehi, not me, is suggesting we abandon the plumber's wrench when an organ is actively failing. We need rescue medicine.
But rescue medicine is what the biomedical model already does best.
Yes, but what happens when the patient leaves the ICU? What happens when the acute crisis is over, but the underlying organism niche disharmony remains? If we only rely on the targeted suppression of the biomedical model, we are merely managing a slow, incredibly expensive decline.
Well, but...
Natural drift teaches us that humans are biocultural drifters. We conserve our world in language, in institutions, and in the anthroposphere. This massive human-built infrastructure that is now literally reshaping the biosphere.
Which brings us into the realm of planetary health.
It does. When we treat a respiratory illness without addressing the air pollution from fossil energy systems, we are ignoring the structural determinism that makes that illness inevitable. The body is the biological memory of our drift. Our immune systems, our microbiomes, our mitochondrial states, they are the physiological records of our civilizational choices.
And I completely agree that the body carries the history of its environment. But the danger of the natural drift paradigm is precisely this limitless expansion into planetary niche making.
How so?
You bring up the anthroposphere and the biosphere. The text speaks of the biosphere-anthroposphere unity, framing human systems and Earth systems as mutually conditioning one another. Ecologically, true. Medically, It invites a level of abstraction that threatens to dissolve the boundaries of clinical practice entirely.
How does seeing the whole picture dissolve the practice?
Because if every disease is framed as a planetary pathology, if climate change, digital attention capture, and global supply chains are all placed on the medical chart as actionable items, we lose the specific targeted power that makes medicine effective.
But
yes, the global food system is broken. Yes, our digital environments capture our attention and destroy our circadian rhythms. But the physician's mandate must remain relentlessly focused on the localized biology of the patient sitting in front of them. We must maintain strict domain discipline, otherwise medicine becomes an organ of civilizational reflection, rather than a practice of physiological healing.
But medicine is already an organ of civilizational reflection, whether we admit it or not. Every single time a physician prescribes a medication for an illness generated by poverty, stress, or toxic exposure, medicine is reflecting the consequences of our anthroposphic drift.
Sure, but
the difference is that currently, medicine operates blindly within that drift. We are concerning a techno-managerial approach that optimizes for throughput and billing codes rather than actual healing. We have to move toward a regenerative drift, and this brings us directly to the concept of One Health.
Right, the idea that human, animal, and environmental health are linked.
Yes, but traditional One Health is often captured by a biosecurity frame. It asks, how do we monitor bat populations to prevent the next zoonotic spillover so human commerce can continue uninterrupted?
Which is a valid question.
It is. But a life-coherent One Health, informed by natural drift, asks a much deeper mechanistic question. It asks, how do we restore the relations among humans, animals, plants, microbes, and ecosystems so that fewer pathogenic threats are generated in the first place? Zoonotic spillover isn't just a virus randomly jumping species.
Right.
It's the clinical appearance of disrupted habitats, wildlife stress, and intensive livestock density. You cannot separate the biological event from the ecological and civilizational pattern.
And here's where we actually find some crucial, undeniable convergence. I fully agree that human health is inextricably linked to global systems, agriculture, and ecosystems.
Right.
We cannot manage emerging infectious diseases or antimicrobial resistance without veterinary medicine, agricultural reform, and ecological monitoring. The core truth of One Health is rock solid.
So you agree the biomedical model isn't enough?
My disagreement is not with the reality of biosphere-anthroposphere coupling. My disagreement is with the proposed solution, that natural drift should fundamentally replace the core clinical paradigm at the bedside.
Ah.
I argue that these macro-level insights, structural determinism, the field of viability, civilizational drift, these should absolutely inform public health policy. They should drive epidemiological surveillance and environmental regulation. But they should not fundamentally restructure the localized, acute, rescue-oriented paradigm of bedside medicine.
So keep them separate.
Medicine can strongly advocate for clean water, better food systems, and climate mitigation without turning the 15-minute clinical encounter into an exercise in diagnosing civilizational drift.
Well, to summarize my position in light of our discussion today, humanity ultimately becomes what it conserves. For the past century, we have conserved an industrial fossil and now digital financial drift that extracts margins from both the biosphere and the human body.
Yeah.
Our soaring rates of chronic, metabolic, and autoimmune diseases aren't biological accidents. They are the embodied physiological proof that this manner of living is no longer viable. Medicine must pivot. It cannot merely be a downstream repair service for a life-disabling civilization.
Mm.
By embracing the natural drift framework, by truly understanding organism niche unity, and by utilizing the field of viability to diagnose the true constraints and disturbances our patients face, medicine can help humanity actively conserve life capacity. It's about restoring the fundamental conditions in which life can continue to bring forth life.
And to summarize where I stand, I maintain that while civilizational drift undeniably shapes our biology and creates the conditions for disease, medicine must preserve its targeted, localized power.
Right.
The traditional biomedical model,
With its strict focus on physiological determinants, precise anatomy, and interruptive pharmacology, is quite simply the greatest rescue apparatus human beings have ever devised. We must maintain strict scope discipline. While we should undoubtedly support One Health initiatives at the macro level, we cannot ask clinical medicine to bear the weight of planetary redesign. The firefighter must remain relentlessly focused on the fire, not on the historical failures of the zoning board.
It seems we certainly agree on the macro reality, at least. Human health is inextricably linked to global systems, agriculture, and ecosystems. That One Health reality is no longer a fringe idea. It is scientifically undeniable.
Absolutely. The question that remains open is how deeply that reality must penetrate the core operational logic of clinical practice. Do we look through the microscopic lens of acute biology or the macroscopic lens of planetary history?
Right.
And how much can those two perspectives truly overlap in the critical moment of patient care?
Exactly. Whether natural drift must replace the current paradigm or simply inform our broader public health strategies is the tension we have to navigate. There's so much to explore in Dr. Sahali's source material regarding our civilization's historical drifts, from early foraging and agriculture to the methanoic possibilities of our future.
There really is.
We leave it to you, the listener, to draw your own conclusions on where the boundaries of medicine should lie. But as we close, think back to that angiogram we talked about at the start. The comfort of the precision x-ray, the clearly blocked artery, the mechanical fix.
Yeah.
It is a beautiful piece of engineering, but when the foundation of the house is slowly sinking into the soil, fixing the plumbing, no matter how precisely, will not save the structure forever. Thank you for joining us on The Debate.